Pada Nyasai Puja Vidutivi Sa Smitai Bru Vilasaya. Nyasai Buja Vidu Vibu Vidu Tibi Sasmitai Bru Vilasa Adanya Sai Buja Vidu Tibi Sasmitai Bru Vilasa Bhajan Madhyaish Chala Kucha Patai, Kundalai, Gandalolai, Bhajan Majaschala, Kuchapatai, Kundalai, Gandalolai, Bhajan Majaschala, Kuchapatai, Kundalai, Gandalolai, Sai Buja Vibhuti Bhisma Smita Bhu Vilasa Bhajan Majaischala Kucha Patai Kundalai Gandalolai Svidyan Mukhya Kavala Rasanam Grataya Krishna Vadbo Svidyan Mukya Kavara Rasanam Grataya Krishna Vadbo Svidyan Mukya Kavara Rasanam Grataya Krishna Vadyo Gayantyas Tam Tadita Iva Ha Megha Chakve Vireju Gayantas Tam Tadita Iva Ta Megha Chakve Vireju Gayantas Tam Tadita Iva Ta Megha Chakve Vireju Pada of their feet. Nyasai by the placement. Bhuja of their hands. Viduti bhi by the gestures. Sasmitai smiling. Bhru of their eyebrows. Vilasai by the playful movements. Bhajan bending. Madhyai by their middles. Chala moving. Kucha covering their breasts. Patai by the clothes. This is a description of the rasa dance. And these last three words here, chala, kucha, patai. So here it's being translated as moving, covering their breasts and by the cloth. So it sounds like they're moving the cloth. You know, they've got some coloured cloths there and they're moving them around and, you know, covering up different parts of their bodies and moving them around. Vishnath Chakravarti Thakur, he gives an interesting explanation of this, and he's saying that the gopis picked up the cloths they had previously laid on the ground for Krishna to sit on and waved them in the air while they sang. So the gopis are dancing and swirling around, but also holding these cloths, and they're dancing, and the cloths are also, you know, like sometimes you may see different types of styles of dancing where they hold cloth. You know, the ladies, they hold cloth and they spin around, the cloths, they swirl around in the air, and it makes the whole thing look much more attractive. And also here it talks about vidutivi by the gestures. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he talks about mudras. So mudras mean like hand gestures which are meant to communicate messages. Just like in deity worship, there's so many different mudras we use to indicate certain things. And there's five particular mudras which are very dear to Krishna, which they're called Krishna mudras. And one of them is called the Varnamali mudra, like that, which indicates the flute. So the pujari at the end of the worship, you know, after he's been worshipping Radha and Krishna, if he likes, he can show these five mudras to Krishna, and they're very pleasing to Krishna. One's Varnamali, which is like this, and you show the, you know, indicator garland, and you show the flute, and different things like that. I think that one's a conch like that. And these things are pleasing to Krishna. So they're communicating messages to the person. And just like we see with Bharatanatyam dancing and Kathak dancing, they use many different mudras. And through the use of these mudras, they're actually able to tell a story. You know, and sometimes when you see different types of Bharatanatyam dancing, that they may explain at the beginning of the dancing, they may explain, you know, what the dance is about. And as they're explaining what the dance is about, you see the girls, or sometimes men also do Bharatanatyam, who are doing the dancing, they'll be going through the dance and showing the various mudras that are indicating, you know, like sometimes they do like this to indicate Krishna's lotus eyes, and they'll do like this to show a peacock feather on the head and different things like that. And this helps to communicate the story. And so through mudras they're able to communicate different things. And for one who's expert, you know, with dance, who knows about these different types of dancing, the Kathak and the Bharatanatyam and things like that, then they're able to actually, you know, watch the dance and understand the story. You know, just like someone who's expert at Sanskrit, they can hear these slokas, they understand what's being said. So it's a way of communicating. So we see here the gopis, they're using various hand gestures. It says bhuja vidutibihi. Yeah? Bhuja means hands, vidutibihi, various gestures. So they're actually, they're sending messages of love to Krishna with their hands, that, you know, and they're just very, very wonderful dancing is being described. Certainly not like the dancing we see here in this world. The dancing we see here in this world, particularly, you know, what they do at night times in the clubs and stuff, it's sending messages, but a completely different type of message, you know, very much in the lower modes type of message. Whereas the message the gopis are singing here, sending here, is completely transcendental to the modes of material nature. Ha kundalai, by their earrings, ganda, on their cheeks. Lolai, rolling. So obviously they have long earrings, and as they're dancing, they're rolling backwards and forwards on their cheeks, which would also be very attractive. So sometimes you see when we dress the deities, we also have, at least I know when I dress the deities, I like to have very long earrings on Krishna that come right down past his cheeks, because they look very nice. Svidyam, perspiring. Mukhya, whose faces. So they're perspiring, there's perspiration on their faces, they're dancing so hard, there's perspiration on their faces. Actually, I remember my wife was telling me, she was talking to one of the young girls who had been dancing in the kirtan. She was saying to my wife, you know, the kirtan on Baramponi in the evening is quite a nice kirtan after the swimming festival. I think Krishnakish was leading the kirtan, wasn't it? It was a Keshava. Yeah, so the devotees were dancing very lively, and she was asking my wife, "Oh, are you exhausted after that kirtan?" Because some of the devotees were dancing very, very enthusiastically, and when you dance, you know, sweat just naturally comes. So the gopis also, they're dancing very, very enthusiastically. Kavara, the braids of their hair. Rasana, and their belts. Agrantaya, having tightly tied. Now, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, he gives a secondary understanding of this word also. I'll just see if I can quickly find it. very interesting when you read these different commentaries, the different points that the Acharyas are able to bring out because of their understanding of the Shastra and their understanding of Sanskrit language. Actually, I was reading this morning in the 22nd chapter of the Madhya Lila, it's talking about all the various levels of advancement in devotional service, particularly Kanistha, Madhyam and Uttama. So it's talking about like a Kanistha is one who has very weak, pliable faith, you know, they can easily be shaken. Whereas a Madhyam is one who has much stronger faith, but they're not convinced in the Shastra. And when you look at that, it's kind of, you know, and then it says that an Uttam is one who's able to establish the principles of devotional service based on the Shastra and is able to quote Shastra and knows the logic of Shastra. So you think, well, you know, there's so many devotees in ISKCON who can quote so many slokas and support their points based on this, that and the other thing. So they must be Uttams. But actually, when you look at the way that the Acharyas explain, the way they're able to analyse, just like this, I think there's a book of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, it may even be in the 10th canon, in this Sharatha Darshini, where he talks about how different demons are chastising Krishna or saying all these bad things about Krishna, and he uses those words to show how they're glorifying Krishna. Because everyone, you know, because one of the names of Krishna is Uttama Shloka, he's that person who's glorified by, you know, wonderful prayers. So everyone's always engaged in glorifying him, whether they know it or not. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, because he has such a deep understanding of the Sanskrit language, he's able to show how actually they're engaged in glorification, even though normal people will see it indifferently. And also we see, excuse me, with different so-called philosophers, and particularly Mayavadis, they misunderstand the language because they just take the words and they translate the words A, B, C, D like this. They have no realization as to actually the purport or the import of the words, what they're actually meant to be saying. But a devotee, because he understands that everything is connected to Krishna, that the whole Bhagavatam is about Krishna. And this is actually a very interesting story. I think I mentioned it before with Ramanujacharya when he was a young boy, that his so-called guru was taking one beautiful verse and translating it in a way that was very, very unfavorable. And actually when Ramanuja was hearing this, he was crying. He was very, very distressed by this. And then the guru said, you know, why are you so disturbed? You know, I'm quoting this verse, you're describing the glories of, describing the nature of God, and you're upset. And he says, yes, I'm upset because you're misinterpreting it so badly. Because he was saying something like that the Supreme Personality of God has reddish cheeks like the backside of a monkey. Something like that. This is the Mayavadi's approach, is they take the Shastra and they use the Shastra to try to destroy God, to try to deny the existence of God. And therefore they're demons. And this is why Prabhupada would also say the scientists are demons, because they try to deny the existence of God. They try to take the credit for everything themselves. Just like we see there's the law of gravity. What do they call it? Newton's law of gravity. So that would imply that Isaac Newton invented it. But of course we understand that Isaac Newton was actually a religious man. But it's called Isaac Newton's law of gravity, implying that he invented it. So before Isaac Newton came along, was gravity there? Well, he just came up with some formula to explain it. But it doesn't mean it's his invention. No, he just explained it. The law of gravity has always existed. Anyhow, so Srila Prabhupada, he denounces people. The Acharyas, they all denounce people who deny the existence of God because try to take the credit for these things themselves. Because Krishna, he is the creator. Everything comes from him. He makes this point so clearly in the Gita, in the 10th chapter, that you know he says, I am the source of everything. Nothing else. And we see that. Who's able to create anything in this world? Show me one thing that you can create. There's absolutely nothing you can create. All you do is you take something else, you transform it, and there you go. Just like someone say, I created this. No, actually you didn't. You chopped down a tree. You cut it up, you dried it out, cut it up in pieces, and carved it, and it was already created. You just changed it. And you're just adapting it to suit your purposes. But actually, the only person create, because create means to make something from nothing. And the only person who can do that, in reality, is God. Therefore, one of the secondary names of God is the Creator. He creates things. So we see here that, as I was mentioning with Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura, as an Acharya, he understands the deeper meanings of these things. Whereas someone who can just speak on Shastra, who can quote a few verses here and there, you know, based on the readings the Acharyas give, is not necessarily someone who's a Madhyamadhikari. Uttamadhikari. They're most likely a Madhyamadhikari. Yeah? Whereas we see an Uttamadhikari, he's able to understand the deeper purport of the Shastra. Able to understand. And having this book, the Sharatha Darshan, is such a benediction for devotees to be able to understand that the deeper meanings of these verses and what is actually going on here. Because we see that if a person who has no knowledge of Krishna, who has no knowledge of the relationship of the love of the gopis for Krishna, reads these verses, then what is their natural conclusion? They compare it to be something like Playboy magazine or something like that. You know, it's just like amorous romance, you know, and it's just like lusty dealings. And that's exactly what happens. In India we see, I've seen in Vrindavan, I've also seen in Puri, these Bhagavat Shaptahas, where for 7 days they have these gatherings where people come. And some of them, there's many tens of thousands of people come to hear these professional reciters speaking on the pastimes of Krishna. But not all the pastimes of Krishna. Because we see that, you know, because their whole notion is based on Sukadeva Goswami's presentation of the Bhagavatam to Parikshit Maharaj. It said it took 7 days to speak 18,000 verses. So they based on that. Yet what do? They don't discuss the whole Bhagavatam. They don't start with the first canto and go all the way through to the 12th canto. No, they start on chapter 29, or maybe they start on this chapter 33, and for 7 days they discuss these intimate pastimes of the Supreme Lord with his most intimate associates, without the qualification to understand what is going on. There's nothing wrong with discussing these pastimes if we understand that they are not mundane pastimes, if we try to enter into the proper understanding of what the exchange is that's going on here. It's not an ordinary exchange between a lusty boy and lusty young girls, as we see in this world. But they misunderstand it, and they use the readings of these pastimes, generally speaking, in order to incite their own lusty desires. Even you can see there's examples of people who approach Srila Prabhupada, and they ask Prabhupada to speak to him about the intimate pastimes of Radha and Krishna and the gopis. And Prabhupada, being an Uttamadhikari, could understand where they're coming from, understand what their motivation is. They just want to arouse their own lusty desires so they can go off and enjoy sex life. So what did Prabhupada say? Such a humble soul, rather than saying, "Oh, you're a rascal, you're listening to this sinner, something, I'm not qualified to make this sense. I'm not qualified to speak." So we see with the greatly advanced devotees, they understand that these pastimes in great depth, and they're actually able to explain things to us with much clarity. And there's one interesting point I remember one sadhu in Vrindavan made years ago when he was giving class, that you can hear different people give class on exactly the same verse, and you get different things out of the class every time. And sometimes when people explain things to you, they may explain something from Shastra 2 and your understanding is no clearer than what you already had. And then other times, like say for instance you listen to Prabhupada's class and he explains such a simple point, like I was talking in class on Friday, this point Prabhupada made about creation. How actually only God creates, everyone else destroys. And this just gave me such a clearer understanding of what it means by creation. We don't create anything, we can't, we don't have that capacity. Creation means you're making something from nothing. But because Prabhupada has such a clear understanding of things, when he explains something to you, it becomes transparent. And this is what it's meant when they say a transparent via media, is that the spiritual master is able to reveal Krishna to you without any contamination. A self-realized spiritual master can reveal Krishna, can reveal the pastimes of Krishna to you without any contamination. Therefore you understand But if someone themselves explains something to you and they don't understand it so clearly, either your understanding is not improved or you become more confused. Which is what happens when the Mayavadis explain things. It's like Sarvam Bhattacharya. So he was reciting Vedanta Sutra to Lord Chaitanya, and then he was asking Lord Chaitanya, he was asking, you know, what he thought of it. He asked him if he understood, because he wasn't asking him any questions. He says, "So you understand Vedanta Sutra?" He says, "Yes, I understand Vedanta Sutra, but I don't understand a word of what you said." Yeah? And like for days he's reciting Vedanta Sutra to him, and Lord Chaitanya says, "This is just confusing." Yeah? So Lord Chaitanya clearly understood Vedanta Sutra, and Krishna he reveals in the Gita. He says, Vedanta Krit Aham, that I am the compiler of the Vedanta, I am the knower of the Veda, and by all the Vedas, indeed, it is only me that is to be known. Yet Mayavadis, they'll present so many different interpretations on what Vedanta is all about, what Veda is all about. And it's just word chakra meant to confuse people. Yeah. And just like we see, I know someone who used to be in the Rajneeshis, and I remember years ago reading some of their books, and just like, the guy's just like a politician. You know, it's just like, if you ever listen to a politician, you know, they're asked a very direct question on something. Yeah? And what do they say? They speak lots and lots of words, but what do they say? Absolutely nothing. Nothing. Because why? Well, you know, like, if they actually say something tangible, maybe you can pin them down and say, look, you said you were going to do this. You know? But they make all these grand promises with no substance whatsoever to them. It's worded in such a way that you can't actually pin them down on anything. So in the same way with this so-called guru, his books is just like this Veda Vatarata, Krishna calls them in the Gita, the flowery words of the Veda. So many big flowery words, but actually not really saying anything. It sounds really nice. Like one of the ones I always get a kick out of is the sound of one hand clapping. I mean, clapping means two things meeting. Yeah? So to say the sound of one hand clapping is a meaningless statement. There is actually no meaning to it. Because in order to clap, you have to have two things striking each other. That's what a clap is. Yeah? And like sometimes Prabhupada would often talk about, Dr. Radha Krishna in his commentary on I forgot what verse it is, but there's a commentary that he made on a particular verse in the Gita. Within, again, you know, a very interesting example of a meaningless statement. Because Prabhupada explained it very succinctly. Krishna's within and without are identical. There's, because he is the supreme absolute person, because he's a transcendental personality. See, because this person is putting a mundane presentation, a mundane twist on it. Because he's thinking, I have within and without, therefore God has within and without. Not understanding. Not understanding at all the reality of Krishna. But Prabhupada, very clear understanding, succinctly explains it in very short statement. There is no difference between Krishna's within and without. So when someone actually has an understanding of a point, they're very easily able to explain it to you. But if one doesn't understand it, either you don't increase your understanding, you get more confused from their explanation. So here we see that Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is saying that this word agrantaya, it can mean things are tightened, as I think it's saying here. Yeah, having tightly tied. Or without the long A at the start, it can mean loosened. So he's implying that because we see here, it's describing how they're dancing very, very enthusiastically, and so that they're sweating. So you know what it's like when you're in kirtan. I remember seeing one Maharaj in Vrindavan one time. He was dancing wildly in kirtan, and his dhoti start to come off. So he sort of goes away into the corner and sort of ties his dhoti up and tucks it all back in. And so that happens sometimes, you know, it's like you get really enlivened in the kirtan, you're dancing wildly in the kirtan, and you know, clothes start to come, and sometimes the ladies may have flowers in the hair, and the flowers will fall out, or you know, all different things like that. Or sometimes we've even seen, you know, Prahlad when he dances in kirtan, you know, Sri Prahlad, he's got quite a big sika and it's a heavy knot. So I mean, he spins wildly in kirtan, and sometimes I've seen how his sika comes undone in the kirtan. So this is, you know, we're enthusiastic about these things. So again, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur is giving a further understanding on you know, just a straightforward word here. And this is really nice, because then you start to understand, you know, get a picture of what is going on. And that's the idea here, is to, you know, try and, you know, picture the pastime based on these descriptions. Krishna Vadva, the consorts of Lord Krishna. Gayantya, singing tam, about him. Tadita, bolts of lightning. Eva, as if. Ta, they. Megha chakre, in a range of clouds. Viriju, shone. Beautiful description there. It's talking about how the gopis appeared like bolts of lightning in clouds. You ever seen that? You know how the lightning's flashing in the clouds? I remember one time, I think it was the first time actually I went to India. I went with Garuda, Subhadra and Lakshmivan. We all flew to India. And I woke up in the middle of the night and the plane was just banking around this huge, big, like huge column of clouds, gigantic. And there was just all this lightning was playing in the clouds. It looks so beautiful just to watch all the lightning dancing around inside the clouds. So it's describing here how the gopis, when they were singing and glorifying Krishna, how they looked like bolts of lightning dancing in the clouds. Very nice description. Okay, so translation. As the gopis sang in praise of Krishna, their feet danced, their hands gestured, and their eyebrows moved with playful smiles. Imagine that, their eyebrows are moving with playful smiles. Interesting description. With their braids and belts tied tight, their waists bending, their faces perspiring, the garments on their breasts moving this way and that, and their earrings swinging on their cheeks, Lord Krishna's young consorts shone like streaks of lightning in a mass of clouds. So a wonderful description of the pastime there. I'll read the purport. Srila Sridhar Swami explains that according to the analogy of lightning flashing in clouds, the perspiration on the lovely faces of the gopis resembled drops of mist, and their singing resembled thunder. The word agrantaya may also be read as agrantaya, meaning loosened. This would indicate that although the gopis began the dance with their hair and belts tightly drawn, these gradually slackened and loosened. And it's very interesting, because we see also that, remember that pastime we read a few chapters back, when Krishna was dancing on the head of Kaliya? Does anyone remember what he did before he jumped into the water? He tightened his belt. You know, he was up in the Kadamba tree, which is still there in Vrindavan. You go there and see that the Kadamba tree that's growing there, they say, is a part of that original Kadamba tree, because apparently, when Garuda was flying over that area many thousands of years before, after he'd actually... it's interesting, because when you read the Puranic, and there's a book called Puranic Encyclopedia, a very big fat book, it's got many different stories, and it links a lot of the stories in the Bhagavatam together, so you see how all these things are interacting. So when the ocean of milk was churned and the pot of nectar was produced, Garuda stole that pot of nectar, because his mother, who was Kadru, I think. There's two sisters, Kadru and there's Vinita. So I think Kadru is the mother of Garuda. Huh? The snake mother is Kadru, so Vinita is his mother. So Vinita is his, thank you, Manji. Vinita is his mother. Is his mother. So she was enslaved by her sister Kadru. Huh? And this was all based on a false, you know, Kadru had done something wrong. She had made a wager with her sister as to what the colour of the tail of Uchashriva was. Uchashriva was the horse that was produced from the churning of the ocean milk. And she said it was black, and Garuda's mother said it was white. And what she had done, she'd asked her children, the snakes, to enter into the tail, so the tail looked black, and she won the wager, therefore that Garuda's mother had to be her servant. So anyhow, he made a deal with the snakes that if I bring you a drop of this nectar, if I bring you the nectar, the pot of nectar from the churning of the ocean of milk, will you let my mother go? And they said, of course, because it was the nectar of immortality. So Garuda wasn't silly. While he was carrying this pot of nectar, he dropped some nectar, I believe purposely, on this tree because he knew this tree was going to be used by his master to perform his pastimes. He wanted to preserve the tree. So that tree was made immortal by that drop of nectar. The tree's still there now. And also, then he brought the nectar for the snakes and he tipped it on to some kusha grass. This is why kusha grass shines, is because it has this nectar spilt on it. And then he said to the snakes actually said to him, well, so where's our nectar? And they said, he said, first you let my mother go. I said, okay. And he says, it's down there on the kusha grass. They went down there and went down there to lick the kusha grass up, and they licked it up and split their tongues. That's why snakes have forked tongues. Because kusha grass is very, very sharp. You have to be careful, you know, when you're using the kusha mats and things like that. If you run your hands on them, you can cut your hands. Very, very sharp. So, lots of these stories are connected. So that Kadamba tree which Krishna climbed up on, and when he climbed up on the Kadamba tree, he tightened his belt around his waist and he was flailing his arms around like this and he jumped in. So before the gopis start the rasa dance, they're also, you know, obviously they have some idea that they're going to be very, you know, enthusiastic in the dancing, so they're tightening up all their clothes to make sure it's, you know, nicely presented. And then, as Vishnushtrakali Thakur was describing here, the clothes gradually become slackened and loosened. Srila Vishnushtrakali Thakur points out that the gopis were expert at exhibiting mudras, precise hand gestures that express feelings or convey meanings associated with the theme of performance. And as I was saying before, you see this particularly in Bharatanatyam dancing. Kathak doesn't have as many mudras, Kathak's more with the feet. But the Bharatanatyam, you see a lot of mudras, and they're actually telling the story by the various hand gestures. And for one who's expert, they can understand the story by observing the hand gestures and things. So obviously, the gopis here, as it's describing in the verse, they're dancing and they're moving around in various ways, and they're expressing these beautiful hand gestures. They're dancing around, they're swinging their cloth, you know, they have these cloths around their heads and they're spinning around. Like sometimes you see in Mayapur, the sannyasis, when they get excited, they take their uttariyas off and they're spinning them around there like that. You know. So again, we see the gopis, they're dancing in such a way that this performance is very, very attractive. You know, and they're perspiring. And I think, was it in here? I think it's there's one point mentioned in here. How the drops of perspiration. I can't find it. It was talking about how the drops of perspiration on their cheeks were looking also very attractive, just like jewels. So just the whole description here. And this is the language of the Bhagavatam is like that. It is a very poetic language, very, very nice descriptions. And so they're dancing around, they've got these colourful cloths in the air, they're perspiring, you know, their hair's becoming slackened, and so many different things. They're expressing these very beautiful mudras with their hands and things like that. And the whole scene is just so attractive. And they're doing all these things to attract Krishna, to attract his mind. They're not doing it with this idea to enjoy with Krishna, they're not even doing it out of some lusty desires, like we mentioned before. You'll see, you know, I mean, I know devotees don't go to these places, but I know we're all aware of these places, nightclubs, etc. And you know, the young ladies, they go dressed there in I use the term ladies very loosely, of course. They go there dressed in very provocative ways, you know, and they dance in very provocative ways, and the men also dance in very provocative ways, with the whole concept of attracting the minds and the attention and the senses of each other with a specific purpose in mind. So someone might equate, well, the gopis are doing exactly the same thing. They're dancing in a very, very attractive way with a specific purpose in mind. Yes, this is true, but the purpose is completely different. You know, materialistic people, their purpose is to attract each other for the purpose of enjoying their senses. They couldn't care less about the senses of the other person. This is the sole motivation. And even though it may seem it's a mutual thing because they're both interested in enjoying their senses, but still it's a selfish motivation because really we're only interested in enjoying my senses. I couldn't care whether you enjoy your senses or not. That doesn't bother me because that's your problem. If you're not satisfied, that's your problem. And that's materialistic sense enjoyment. It's what it's like in this material world. Everyone's only interested in their own personal gratification or extended gratification, but they're not interested in satisfying others. Yet we see here that the one of the main differences here is the gopis' motivation is only to satisfy Krishna. They don't mind, they're not considering whether I'm satisfied or not. That's not their consideration. And Krishna Das Kaviraj, he describes this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. This is the difference between karma and prema. With karma, or lust, the motivation is to satisfy the self. That's all you're interested in. And the whole material world is motivated by that. You see, no matter what activity you see in this material world, it is motivated by lust, simply. Karma esha krodha esha raja guna samudbhavan. This is what Krishna says to Arjuna. He says, it is lust alone, Arjuna, which is born of contact with the material mode of passion. And is the all-devouring, sinful enemy of this world. And we see that people are actually becoming consumed. And he says, it burns like fire, it's never satisfied. We see that, you know, the more that one tries to satisfy lusty desires, the more they become consumed by these desires, the more they're trying to satisfy the desires. And the thing is, they never do satisfy the desires. Because as Krishna explains to Arjuna, he says, it's like a fire, burns like fire. And what is the nature of the fire? The more fuel you put on the fire, the bigger the fire becomes. It's not like, you know, you put on this piece of wood and the fire says, okay, I'm satisfied now, you fed me, I'm peaceful. No, it wants more and more and more. Have you ever seen a fire, a bushfire or anything like that? You know, it just, you can, there's no limit to the amount of fuel you can throw on a bushfire. No limit. You know, and was it last year? Or the year before we had those bushfires? You know, I think it was the year before last. It was apparently the worst fires that they had in Australia in 30 years. And I remember Ramai Swami was telling me, he was up in Canberra when that firestorm went through Canberra, and he said he'd never seen anything like it, just like houses were just exploding in flames, disappearing. The fire was so powerful, in a second a whole house is consumed. And of course around Canberra in those days it was all pine forests. Well, not many pine forests left, they all burnt up, but pine forests, pine burns particularly fast because the sap in the pine, when it becomes heated, is explosive. So it burnt very, very fast. And we see that, you know, there's no chance of satisfying. And actually, the fire people, you know, the fire brigade men or whatever they are, the country fire authority, they just couldn't do anything. They just had to let the fire burn out. It was such a fire. It just had to burn out. And that's what it's like in this material world. Yeah? And actually, the only thing that can actually put out such a fire is rain. Yeah? When the rain comes and it puts out the fire. Because you see, you know, Krishna's system, when, you know, he doesn't just drop a few 100 or 1,000 gallons or liters of water on something. When it rains, he drops thousands or millions of tons of water. Yeah? It's just incredible sometimes the amount of water that can drop out of the sky, particularly in places like Bombay. And our son was there during the floods last year, and it was just like extraordinary the amount of rain that fell in such a short period of time. So we see that when the living entities are consumed by these fires of material desires, there is no possibility of satisfying the desire. This is the nature of karma. No possibility. Never satisfied. Krishna says that. It is never satisfied and it burns like fire. There's nothing you can do about it, you know, materially. But spiritually, it can be satisfied. And this is described, this is samsara dava nara lila loka. That the spiritual master, he, you know, by his instruction, by the transcendental knowledge, he puts out the blazing fire of material existence. So for a person who's consumed by this material lusty desires, if they actually take shelter of the process of devotional service, if they inquire into the nature of the self, if they inquire into the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and they receive instruction from a qualified, from a self-realized personality, the spiritual master, then he's able to remove this blazing fire of material existence through Divyagana, through transcendental knowledge about, you know, which is basically starts with Sambandhikyan, or the relationship of the self and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we see here, but with the gopis, this is not at all their motivation. Their motivation is simply to satisfy Krishna. And it is the same nature, because this prema, this lust, because it is lust, but it's a transcendental lust. This prema or love they have for Krishna also is never satisfied. But it has a different result. You know, what happens is when the living entity, when they're consumed by lust, they try to satisfy the lust. It just results in more and more lust. And what happens is then, as Krishna explains in the Gita, adoga chanti tamasaha, is because of their lusty desires, they're pushed down into lower species of life. It causes them to take lower and lower and lower births. You know, and Krishna, he explains the whole the whole succession of it in the end of the second chapter was Jayato Visham Bung Sang Sangastesha Bajayate Sangat Sanjayate Kama Kama Kroda Bajayate Kroda Bhavati Samoha Samoha Smiti Bhagavan Smiti Bhangsa Buddhinasha Buddhinasha Panashi. He describes, you know, the Jayato Visham Bung Sa, the living entity, while contemplating Vishaya, the senses, the objects of the senses, he becomes attached to them. And from this attachment the lust develops, and from lust, you know, material desires. And it describes this whole succession of how the living entities, you know, anger, greed, all these different things manifest. And this is krodat bhavati sammoha. When anger arises, then bewilderment of memory. When memory is bewildered, intelligence is lost. And when intelligence is lost, one is pushed down again into the material pool. This is the succession. This is exactly what happens. You see this. You see it with children even, you know, it's a simple thing. You can, you know, they want something, right? And you don't give it to them. What happens? They cry, they become angry, they start, you know, and what do? They throw themselves down the ground and beat their hands on the floor and kick their shoes and bang their head on the ground. They lose all sense of you know, good behavior. Just, you know, they lose their intelligence. And you see it, you know, you can see it in a very simple thing like that, you know, with children, because as Burjan was explaining the other day, I can't remember exactly what I said, but it was a really interesting explanation. It's because children don't have this false ego to the same extent that we do. Yeah? We try to justify and cover up and everything like that and have this, you know, external appearance of dignity. Yeah? But children don't have that. They just express their emotions. Straightforward, express their emotions. You know? And so in that way you can see very clearly how things are happening, you know, just the way Krishna explains it. Of course, someone who's more you know, advanced or aware of what's going on, they can see all these different workings, even in people who are a bit more sophisticated at hiding their emotions and things. But we see that you know, in this world, that when people become overwhelmed by lusty desires, they try to get these things, they get dissatisfied, they get upset, they get angry, you know, and actually you see sometimes The things people do out of anger. You know, they kill their loved ones, they do so many different things, you know, just because they were dissatisfied, because they couldn't satisfy their senses in a particular way. They wound up doing so many abominable things. It's vinashiti. They're destroyed, they're lost. They just disappear into the material pool again. And this is exactly what happens. Yet, we see here, you know, in one sense it's similar. The way it works is similar, but completely different. The result is completely different. Because the gopis, they're absorbed by prema, and the prema is not satisfied. They want to do more and more to please Krishna, and the prema grows, their love for Krishna grows, and they want to, you know, their transcendental emotion, their transcendental feelings for Krishna are constantly increasing and constantly not satisfied. But it's not that they produce negative emotions, because they just want to serve Krishna more and more and more. This is the nature of love. Because Krishna, as we were explaining the other day, he's not a finite person. He's not like, you know, this is how great he is and he never gets bigger. Krishna's unlimited. And he's always constant. His glories are constantly increasing. Just like we used that example the other day, Prabhupada was asked one time, is your God so great that he can create a mountain that he can't lift it? And Prabhupada said, yes. And then he will lift it. Because because infinite means he's constantly growing. So if he created a mountain he couldn't lift, and then couldn't lift it, that would mean he was static. That would mean he is definable. He is this big, and that's it. But because he was able to do that, create something he couldn't lift, and then lift it, that indicates that he's infinite. He's constantly growing. And in the same way as Krishna is constantly growing, constantly expanding, his glories are constantly growing and expanding, so is the gopis' love for Krishna constantly growing. And the relationship between Radha and Krishna is constantly growing. They're constantly trying to do greater and greater things. The gopis, same thing, trying to do greater and greater things to satisfy their loved one. And this is the nature of spiritual reality. This material reality is very, very finite. It's easy to understand. If you understand the philosophy of the Gita, you can easily understand what's going on in this material world. It's a bad deal. It's as simple as that. You know, if you look at what's going on in this material world, it is simply a bad deal. Go pick up the newspaper, read the headlines. You tell me you like that? Wars going on here, you know, people trying to blow up airplanes, people, you know, it's just like every day, it never ceases to amaze me how bad things are getting. And it gets worse and worse and worse every day. And it's not like, you know, how many times do you see good news in the newspaper? And they certainly don't put it on page one. Huh? It's usually page three or, you know, more towards the back. You know, the human interest stories, that's where they tell the good things. And it's not very big because there's not that many good things to tell you about. Huh? What do we hear about in the newspapers? There's disease, there's death, war, pestilence, rape, murder. All these things, the material world is a bad deal. Yet we see the spiritual world. Obviously I'm not saying that, we're going to go and become gopis or anything like that. I mean, there's the possibility of engaging in loving pastimes with Krishna. Yet we see that the spiritual world, the focus of the spiritual world is that everyone is simply trying to satisfy Krishna. Their consciousness is focused around pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in this consciousness, they experience this Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam, the ever-increasing ocean of bliss. There is no limit to it. It's ever-increasing. The only thing is, there's only one thing that's ever-increasing here in this material world. What is it? Yeah, misery. Every day it just blows me out. There's just more and more of it. And as you get older, you'll find that. You'll actually get tangible experience of the body. It's just giving you more and more misery every day. And it seems, it's not quite unlimited, but it seems like it's unlimited. It seems like, will it ever end? And you hear people saying that sometimes when they're suffering. Is this ever going to end? It does, with death. Another nice thing to look forward to. Yet we see here in the spiritual realm, the gopis were engaging in this rasa dance with Krishna. Described by the acharyas, how it went on for one night time with Lord Brahma. Krishna, by his mystic arrangement, had taken that one night time in the forest of Vrindavan and expanded it into one night time with Lord Brahma. How long is that? It's a really, really long time. I mean, it's a big number, which I can express it as a number, but it is completely meaningless to me. Even to think of a night that's 10 years long is a little bit hard for me to grasp. But this was like Sahasra Yuga Paryantam. This is 1,000 ages taken together. So that is 4,600,000,000 years. That's how long the Rasa dance went for. And for them it just seemed like one ordinary night. So Krishna's, through his mystic potencies, is able to do that. And the whole time, the gopis were just focused on trying to please Krishna. And I was listening, just to finish up on this point, I was listening to, there's that, I've forgotten which bhajan tape it is of Prabhupada's. But he's giving a purport to that Bhaktivinoda Thakur song Manasa Deha Geha, and so he's the song starts off Manasa Deha Geha Yogachu Mua Apila Tupada Anandi Kishore. So he starts off, he says Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he is talking about surrender, he's describing how to surrender, and he says, and he begins with the mind, because surrender begins with the mind, not with the externals, not with the body, not with the senses. It begins with the mind. And Prabhupada explains how we have to just focus our mind upon Krishna. We have to give our mind completely to Krishna. And then, once you've done that, then everything else will naturally come. Because what we find happening is we try to do it with our senses. And it's not to say that is not helpful, because it is helpful. But what you find is you go through the motions of doing this, service and surrender, etc., with the body and the senses, yet where's the mind? So many other places. It's not there with Krishna. However, if we are able to focus the mind upon Krishna, if we're able to use the mind to serve Krishna, then the other things will automatically follow. Yeah? Because wherever the mind is going, the senses will follow. Yeah? And we find that, you know, if you're always contemplating the objects of the senses, where are you going to go? You're going to go there. You'll go off to the hotel, or you'll go off to whatever it is you're contemplating, you know, to drink alcohol or have illicit sex or take intoxication. You'll do that if that's what your mind's contemplating. But if you're always contemplating Krishna in your mind, then where will you go? What does Krishna say? He says in his, what's that? Yanti deva vataha devam pitrin yanti bhutani yanti bhutacha yanti mad. Anyway, so he's saying, he says, those who worship the demigods, they go to the planets of demigods. Those who worship the ghosts and spirits, they go to their planet. Those who worship the forefathers, they will live with them. But those who worship me, they will live with me. And what does Krishna say? 1863, always think of me. First thing he says, always think of me. Not always work for me. He says, always think of me. And this is where it begins. You know, if we can take up this spirit of the gopis, just they don't think of anything else but Krishna. They actually find it annoying sometimes because they can't get them out of their mind. You see that in one of these verses here. It's talking like, you know, sometimes we just wish we could just get you out of our mind so we can get on with our lives. But they can't. They're so attached to Krishna. They're so determined in their love and their service to Krishna that not even for a moment can they get Krishna out of their minds. And this is the goal of Krishna consciousness, is to be always thinking of Krishna. And he says this in the Gita. You know? To always think of him, you know, man mana bhava mad bhakta, always think of me, always worship me, offer your homage to me. He says, Rashi will come to me without fail, I promise you this. This is Krishna's promise. If we can achieve this state of always thinking of Krishna, and as you're saying, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he gives this as the first point of surrender, just to always be absorbed in Krishna. Then naturally, everything else, in the sixth chapter, Krishna explains, he says, you know, when the mind is fixed upon Krishna, then the mind is your best friend. But if the mind is engaged in other things, it is your worst enemy, because the mind will take you there. The mind is what takes you places. When you start to think of something, then what happens? The mind is contemplating, the senses follow. They want that thing, right? And then they take you there. Right? So whatever the mind is focused upon, that is where you'll go. So the thing is rather than being led by the mind to inauspicious places, you know, become absorbed in these beautiful descriptions. Just read these descriptions here in the Gita, in other places in the Bhagavatam, the beautiful form of the Lord, the beautiful pastimes of the Lord. Become absorbed. This is why we have Bhagavatam class. This is why we read Krishna book in the evenings, or, you know, Mahabharata, all these different things. It's so that we can just, you know, Prabhupada said, he gave many definitions on the Krishna consciousness, but he said, you know, the process of devotional service is so designed that you cannot help but think of Krishna 24 hours a day. And if we achieve this point of thinking of Krishna 24 hours a day, then we've achieved perfection. There's no greater perfection than to be thinking of Krishna 24 hours a day. And this is giving us the process whereby we just become absorbed in hearing these beautiful descriptions of Krishna and his devotees. Thank you very much. Any questions?